The door to the bedroom opened, and my half-brother, Thomas, emerged, freshly showered and smelling faintly of cologne. He was right around 6 feet in height and was built like the high priest of Bowflex, all lean muscle, sculpted and well-formed, not too much of a good thing. He wore a pair of black trousers and black shoes and was pulling a pale blue t-shirt down over his rippling abs as he came into the room. Murphy watched him, blue eyes gleaming. Thomas is awfully pretty to look at. He's also a vampire of the White Court. They didn't go in for fangs and blood so much as pale skin and supernaturally hot sex, but just because they fed on raw life force rather than blood didn't make them any less dangerous. Thomas had worked hard to make sure that he kept his hunger under control so that when he fed, he wouldn't hurt anyone too badly. But I knew it had been a difficult struggle for him, and he carried that strain around with him. It was visible in his expression, and it made all of his movements those of a lean, hungry predator. "Monsters?" he asked. He smiled pleasantly and said, "Karen, good afternoon." "That's Lieutenant Murphy to you, pretty boy," she shot back, but her face was set in an appreciative smile. He grinned back at her from under his hair, which even when wet and uncombed was carelessly curling and attractive. "Why, thank you for the compliment," he said. He reached down to scratch Mouse's ears, nodded to me, and seized up his big black gym bag. "You have some more business come to town, Harry?" "That's the scuttlebutt," I said. "I haven't had time to look into it yet." He tilted his head to one side and frowned at me. "What the hell happened to you?" "Car trouble." "Uh-huh," he said. He slung the bag strap over his shoulder. "Look, you need some help, just let me know." He glanced at the clock and said, "Gotta run." "Sure," I said to his back. He shut the door behind him. Murphy arched an eyebrow. "That was abrupt. Are you still getting along?" I grimaced and nodded. I don't know, Murph. He's been very distant lately, and gone almost all the time, day and night. He sleeps and eats here, but mostly when I'm at work. And when I do see him, it's always like that, in passing. He's in a hurry to get somewhere." "Where?" she asked. I shrugged. "You're worried about him," she said. "Yeah, he's usually a lot more tense than this. You know, the whole incubus hunger thing. I'm worried that maybe he's decided appetite control was for the birds."
"Do you think he's hurting anyone?"
"No," I said at once, a little too quickly. I forced myself to calm down and then said, "No, not as such. I don't know. I wish he'd talk to me, but ever since last fall, he's kept me at arm's length."
"Have you asked him?" Murphy said. I eyed her.
"No."
"Why not?"
"It isn't done that way," I said.
"Why not?"
"Because guys don't do it like that."
"Let me get this straight," Murphy said. "You want him to talk to you, but you won't actually tell him that or ask him any questions. You sit around with the silence and tension and no one says anything."
"That's right," I said. She stared at me. "You need a prostate to understand," I said. She shook her head. "I understand enough," she rose and said. "You're idiots. You should talk to him."
"Maybe," I said.
"Meanwhile, I'll keep my eyes open. If I find anything odd, I'll get in touch."
"Thank you."
"What are you going to do?"
"Wait for sundown," I said.
"Then what?" she asked. I rubbed at my aching head, feeling a sudden surge of defiance for whoever had run me off the road and whatever black magic-y jerk had decided to mess around with my hometown. Then I put on my wizard hat and start finding out what's going on.